Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
If you enjoy thrillers, you'll want to read the latest novel by Chico author Mike Paul. In 2000, he retired from the practice of dentistry in San Francisco Bay Area and became a writer. He first published a book of aviation-based short stories, then a three-volume mystery series with flight in the titles. Beginning in 2021, Mike Paul's spy thriller series, Missing, was released. In 2024, this retired dentist called on his dental background to create the character Rick Rose, a young dentist who works for the San Francisco Medical Examiner. His first book in the Rick Rose series was The Mouth Mechanic. The second was The Head Case. Today I'm going to ask Mike Paul about the third book in this series, The Jumper. Mike Paul, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, you started out drawing on your background as a pilot. I didn't mention you had been a pilot.
Yes.
And that's how you got the material for your very first book, that collection of short stories, which I thought was very interesting. Really enjoyed that. But then you turned to fiction, and I mentioned three, also drawing on your experience as a pilot. You got flight in the titles. But then, these last books, you've drawn on your experience as a dentist, and that's your main character.
Yeah, it is. And I'm enjoying it because I can write it in the first person.
And yes.
I can kind of, people say, gee, you did this and you did that. I say, that's not my character. That's not me. That's my character. But people always want to make the author the actual character. He's not, but it makes it easy to write.
Well, and then sometimes, because we know you are a dentist, you were a dentist, and here's this character of the dentist, so I could see how people would confuse, let's see, is this Mike or is this Rick Rose?
No, I understand. I do.
So if you have this wonderful material because of your backgrounds, and now you're writing the story of the main character who's a dentist, now how'd you come to the idea of writing this particular book?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked me that. That's an interesting story. When I got out of dental school, I drove to Sacramento and picked up my license because I wanted to go to work. And I went into practice down in San Carlos, about 30 miles south of San Francisco. And one of my very first patients was a guy named Bruno, no last name, but his name was Bruno. And even though he lived down in San Carlos, he was a cab driver in San Francisco.
Oh, this is all sounding familiar, Mike.
Doesn't it? So he told me a story, and I'll never forget the story. And it goes something like this. He was working the graveyard. I think graveyard shift was around 11 at night till 7 in the morning. And right in mid-shift, maybe 3 in the morning, 2 in the morning, he picks up a guy in San Francisco, and the man wants to go to Sausalito. So if you're familiar with San Francisco, you know the only way to get from San Francisco to Sausalito is over the Golden Gate Bridge. So Bruno puts him in the back seat, starts over the bridge. They get to mid-span of the bridge, and the guy says, stop. And Bruno says, well, I can't stop. And a gun comes through, a pistol from the back seat, and says, I said, stop. So Bruno pulls to a stop. The guy hands him a $20 bill, gets out of the back seat, opens the door, and jumps off the bridge. Now, that story was told to me, gosh, I can't even remember, but I know 50 years later, I still remembered that story, and lo and behold, I started to write books, and I thought there has to be a beginning to that story, and there has to be an end, because this is just a guy hailing a cab and jumping off a bridge, and so that's what The Jumper is based on.
Did you ever follow or look up and see what the real story was behind this guy who pulls a gun on your friend or your...
There is no real story. There's only my story.
But I would be curious to know what the solution that other people, investigators, found. But
Most people would jump off the bridge you know why they jump off the bridge. In this case, the jumper jumped for a different reason. That's why it makes it a little unique.
Well, and this is the title of this book, The Jumper. I like the titles of your books. They're easy, the one-word titles, pretty much. So why don't you read the prologue to The Jumper, Mike?
Okay, I just want to make one comment. I told you that I write these books, this character of Rick Rose in the first person, but the prologue is the third person. So what I'm going to read you just in this first section is somebody like a narrator is telling us. In other words, we all know what a prologue is, but it's the narrator is telling us what's going to come up with the story. Bruno Cappelletti knew how hard it was to pick up a decent fare at 3 in the morning. Most people hailing cabs at that hour are either drunks or deadbeats. It was too late to hang out in front of a hotel or a restaurant, so as much as he hated burning the gas, he decided to cruise the Embarcadero, a boulevard connecting San Francisco's eastern piers. He was old enough to remember when this was a neighborhood where people thought twice about going out late at night. But urban renewal had taken care of that. Now high-rise condos lined the boulevard and overlooked Fisherman's Wharf and Pier 39. Bruno slowed as he passed Wharf Landing, an expensive condominium complex that sold out 6 months ago in the spring of 2023. His eye caught a uniform attendant opening one of the double glass doors. Instinct signaled him to stop. He braked and backed into the building's white zone. A man who looked to be in his early 40s, wearing jeans and a down parka, hobbled out. In one hand, he held a soft leather briefcase, and with the other, he waved in Bruno's direction. Bruno flipped on the interior lights and popped the lock on the passenger door. The man looked back at the building, then slid into the rear seat. "You okay?" Bruno asked. "You look really pale." "I'm fine. Just too much champagne at the party. Let's get out of here, okay?" "Sure. Where to?" "Just drive." Bruno took off and hung a left back into the boulevard. "I got to start the meter." "Fine. Would you have a towel by any chance?" "Yeah, to clean up after the drunks. Could you hand it to me?" Bruno passed it back. "You're not going to puke in my cab, are you?" "No, I spilled a drink all over my shirt at a party." He stuffed the towel under his parka, then fiddled with a cigarette, and despite a shaky hand, managed to get it lit. "Is that the Golden Gate Bridge up ahead?" "Yeah, you going to Marin?" "Yes, to Sausalito." "No problem. I'll dispense with the travel log then." "Please." The guy took a long drag and let the smoke out through his nose. So why are you working this late anyway?" "Family. One kid in college and another getting ready." "Every night? Working?" "Yeah, you do this every night?" "Every night but Monday. Nobody goes anywhere on Monday." The man nodded, slipped his hand under his coat. He winced, leaned back, and closed his eyes. During the 10 minutes it took to reach the bridge, the temperature dropped a good 5 degrees, low enough to reach the dew point. A thick layer of fog had formed. Bruno squinted, as if that would help him see through the cloud and make it easier for him to spot the approach lane. He drove out of the bridge and, seeing no other traffic, put his foot on the gas. The man felt the acceleration and opened his eyes. Go slower. "Limit's 45. I don't care. Just slow up." Bruno figured the man was unaccustomed to riding in thick fog and dropped down to 30 as he approached the bridge's midspan. "Pull over," the man said. "What? I can't do that." From the back seat, a pistol came through the opening in the glass. "I said pull over. Please." Bruno looked in his rearview mirror. Outside, all he saw was fog, but inside he was able to catch sight of his passenger. The man's face had turned from pale to ashen gray, and he was sweating profusely. Bruno coasted to a stop. The man in the back seat wedged his briefcase through the opening. "For your kid's college," he said. Then the rear door flew open, and while holding one hand against his chest, he limped to the railing and put one leg over the top. He turned back at Bruno with an anguished look. "Be careful," he yelled, and disappeared into the fog.
This is my guest, Mike Paul. He has written quite a few novels, and this is his latest. The title of it is The Jumper, and we hear in the prologue why, who the jumper is in a way, but there's some interesting little clues that you leave in there. I've found it. Now we know who Bruno, the real Bruno, was, and you name your character Bruno, but the main character is not in the prologue, so we don't. How is he going to find out about this?
You mean our forensic dentist, Rick Rose?
Yes. Now, there are a couple of clues in there that, as a reader, we just kind of read them in passing, but they come up later. And one of them is the fact that he asked Bruno for a towel. And he says, "Oh, well, just spill some drink on my shirt." Well, there was more to it than that. We don't know it at the time we read the prologue. And the other thing is he has a leather briefcase. Oh, I don't think much about that. A lot of people have a leather briefcase. But this was not an ordinary leather briefcase.
No, and I'm not going to tell you.
No, no, not yet, because we don't know any more than what you just told us in the prologue. So let's bring our main character in on the scene. And would you read a little bit from chapter one? Mike.
Okay, so now Rick is talking. Rick Rose, the main character. "Any idea what you call a dentist who gets caught drinking on the job? How about unemployed? That was me in 2019. 6 months later, I graduated summa cum laude from an AA program, but my patients weren't the least bit interested. They'd already found other dentists. Every day I take a minute to stare at the plaque on my office door. Rick Rose, DDS, Forensic Odontologist. It looks good, and it sounds a lot better than unemployed. You see, for the last 4 years I've spent a lot of time in the morgue, working for Dr. Alexandra Keller, the chief medical examiner for the city and county of San Francisco. This morning was a typical day at San Francisco. It was cold and it was foggy. As I do every morning, I joined the line in front of Josie's Java truck and waited to pick up a couple of lattes, one for me and one for my wife, for my secretary, Stella."
So this is the author speaking, and he's using the first person and speaking for his main character, Rick Rose. And he says there's a plaque on his office door, Rick Rose, DDS, because he's a dentist, Forensic Odontologist. And probably your readers, unless they've read previous books with this main character, had never heard that term before.
It's real. It's actually real.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't doubt it. But I probably a lot of readers had not heard it, because even the characters in his book,
that's right,
don't know this word.
The characters think he's an orthodontist.
Yes.
Not, yeah.
Both start with an O.
Yeah, right. So an odontologist, a forensic one, is somebody, well, it's a dentist, has to be a dentist, and he uses the mouth in a forensic way to see if he can establish identity on somebody who has died without any identity. That's the short version.
So he works in a morgue.
He does.
And your character, because if we've read the previous books, we know that he works in a morgue, and so he's had the experience of working in a morgue, so he must be used to it. He must not mind working in a morgue.
No, he hates it.
Well, you describe the smells there for us as readers, and we think, oh, gosh.
That's his biggest problem. He can't stand the smell of formaldehyde. But yeah, if you read the books, Rick doesn't really spend all that much time in the morgue.
That's true. He has to do a lot of investigating.
Right. The dentist Rick Rose somehow in these books ends up being Detective Rick Rose.
Yeah, without a badge.
Who would have thunk? Yeah.
And sometimes it comes in handy to have had a badge, but he had to call in other people. Okay, so we meet a couple of characters here. After Rick, Josie, and we learn that that's his ex-wife, and Stella, who he later introduces as a colleague, and she said, well, I'm not really a colleague, I'm your secretary. So the characters that we meet, you often call her Dr. Alex Keller. And Alex could be a guy, but this is Alexandra Keller, and that's his boss. And we learn that she's the chief medical examiner.
Right.
And then there's another character who doesn't mind being in the morgue, apparently. And how does he make his work situation? Who is he, and how does he make his situation pleasant?
Yeah, well, that's Helmut. Helmut is the pathologist. He does all the quote dirty work in the morgue, and he kind of has a personality to match.
Well, let's meet these two characters then. Would you read some more from your book?
Okay. So Rick comes into the office and Stella says, Dr. Keller wants you to stop by. Whenever I have a choice between Alex Keller, my boss, or Helmut Reingold, our pathologist, I always choose Alex. Besides marveling at her intellect, I enjoy being in the company of a woman with shimmering red hair and beautiful green eyes. Her secretary told me to go right in. I knocked once and stepped inside. Good time? I asked. She looked up from the computer. Perfect. Have a seat. Coffee? No thanks. Full up. Stella said you wanted to see me. Yes, a new John Doe checked in last night. No ID or fingerprints? Nothing. No wallet, no papers, and prints didn't match any of the databases. I'm guessing that's why Helmut is tracking me down. Probably, and expect the homicide captain to call you, too. Mike Kelly? Why? Was the guy murdered? If you weren't in recovery, I'd pour you a stiff drink. That bad, huh? The guy jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. Something didn't add up. At least 30 people make that late leap every year, and that's why a barrier is under construction. Since when is committing suicide considered murder? I asked. The guy didn't die from the fall. He drowned? Alex shook her head. Okay already, you gonna tell me or not? Looks like he died from a gunshot wound to the chest.
Ah, the mystery deepens. This is author Mike Paul, reading from his latest Rick Rose novel, The Jumper. We'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, retired dentist Mike Paul, whose latest Rick Rose novel is The Jumper. So, we learned that there's something else. Besides a gunshot wound, when they're inspecting this body, and of course he's looking in the mouth as an odontologist, and what do they find? Well, I tell you what, why don't you read what they found when they examined this guy's mouth?
Okay, so Rick is doing the mouth exam. Helmut has already done the autopsy, and he asks Alex to help him. I handed Alex a metal retractor. Deflect the tongue a little. I want to feel under there. She used the tool to reach under the right side and pull it away from the teeth. I poked two of my latex-covered fingers under the tongue to the floor of the mouth. It felt smooth, like the outside of a rubber inner tube. "Normal," I said. "Let's check the other side." Alex retracted the left side of the tongue, and I stuck my fingers under it. "Uh-oh."
"What?"
"There's a lump under there. Pull on that retractor so I can aim the light in." Alex pulled hard against the tongue to give me visual access. "Wow, it's raised and it's at least 4 centimeters long."
"That's over an inch and a half. What do you think it is?"
"Well, it could be a swollen sublingual salivary gland, but they don't usually get this big. I think it's a tumor of some sort."
"Cancer?"
I shrugged. "Maybe, maybe not. We'll have to excise it and get under a pathologist's microscope. I'm going to need Helmut's help."
"I'll get him," Alex said.
While I waited, I closed my eyes and thought about my histology class at UCLA Dental School. Now I wish I'd paid more attention. But in those days, it was like a melatonin fix that put me to sleep as soon as the professor began to speak. I remember feeling like I died and gone to heaven when Dr. Juzewitski took pity on me with a C-. Helmut jolted me back to the present. "I brought a scalpel and a specimen jar," he said. "You want to remove it or should I?" I held out my hand like I was making an introduction. "He's all yours." He was quick. 2 incisions, a curette to pry the growth from the underlying tissue, and into a specimen jar. "I'll have a report for you tomorrow," he said.
This is now novelist, former dentist, Mike Paul. He's a retired dentist, and he is reading from The Jumper, a Rick Rose novel. And here we see that this main character has a sense of humor. He doesn't claim to be perfect.
Not at all.
And he even says that, "Oh, gosh, I wish I'd paid more attention to that particular class in dental school." So we learn that this guy has a tumor. So now that complicates things. At first we thought, oh, he just jumped off the bridge. No, he also was shot. And now think, well, if he had this tumor, maybe it was his way of dealing with the cancer. We don't know.
Who knows?
Well, it's Rick Rose's job to find out.
I had somebody read the book already and sent me a little email that said, "I like the line when you said that the jumper hit the trifecta."
Oh.
He jumped off the bridge, he got shot, and he had a tumor.
Yeah, yeah. So we as readers think, well, good grief. Any one of those could have killed him. And so, oh, what really? Was it really murder? So we have a little break from the gory part. When they go to, I say they, our character, Rick Rose and Stella, and he says that he has this bar and grill named Momo's, that he says he has a love-hate relationship with Momo's because he likes the ambience but doesn't care for the memories. But he and Stella go there. So would you read that section when they're at Momo's?
Yeah, let me tell you just a brief thing about Stella. Stella is Rick's secretary, but she's a young, happy, kind of go-lucky kind of gal. And Rick is almost 40. She's 25. But their relationship, besides a work one, is Rick, who always seems to have romance issues. He's not too good at it. He uses her as the sounding board to give him advice.
Kind of
advice to the lovelorn, exactly.
And she's curious about his love life. She asks him questions
she's
about it.
She's very curious.
He doesn't always want to answer.
No.
Well, we meet another character when they go to Momo's, and this character, his name is Maverick.
Okay, I think I'm going to meet Stella there. Here we go. So one other thing. Maverick is a bartender there that Rick knows.
Well, since Stella, you've described Stella so appealingly, I'm going to read Stella's lines.
Okay, why don't you do that? Maverick stepped away to fill the drink orders, and Stella picked up a bar napkin to dab a couple beads of perspiration from her forehead.
Wow, that guy's very good looking.
Really? I never noticed.
Is he hooked up, do you think?
I don't know. You want me to ask him?
Oh, God, no. He'll think I'm interested.
Aren't you?
Sure, but I don't want him to know it.
Why not?
Rick, you don't understand women. Some men don't like aggressive ones.
Stella was right. I don't understand them. The only two serious relationships I've ever had in my life ended badly, one with divorce and the other with a Dear John letter. That's what I want to talk to you about.
You have a new girlfriend?
No, no. A buddy wants to set me up on a blind date. I'm curious, is that sort of thing still in vogue?
Well, nowadays most people use dating apps instead of fix-ups.
Isn't that just a blind date using a 10-year-old photo of yourself? Her face took on a pensive expression, and she looked up at the ceiling.
I never thought of it that way. I guess it is kinda. So, who does your buddy want to fix you up with?
A French woman.
Ooh, they're sexy.
How do you know that?
Ever see a Dior perfume ad?
Those are models. This woman's a doctor.
Well, I'll bet she's good looking. What's her picture like?
I told you, this is a blind date. I have no idea what she looks like.
Okay. So, what kind of doctor?
Well, not sure, but my buddy's a psychiatrist, so...
Ooh, be careful. I went out with a psych major once, and all he talked about was my mother this and my mother that.
Okay, other than don't talk about my mother, should I know anything else?
Well, no sleepover on the first date.
Got it. Don't talk about my mother and no sleepover. Anything else?
Don't order scampi.
What? Why not?
Too much garlic. Your breath will smell awful when you kiss her goodnight.
Before I could re-summarize the instructions, our drinks arrived, and so did Stella's red cheeks.
This is a conversation between a couple of characters in the novel The Jumper, written by Mike Paul. So, Rick Rose now is the one he's confronted with this mystery. He's supposed to give people information based on what he sees in the victim's mouth. So, he goes, it's really interesting what he goes through to try to solve this mystery. He has to get help from people who have a badge, because there's some things that he can't do. So, when he meets some characters that are not too savory.
Right. Well, first of all, he does have help with a badge. And that's a character. Jim Allen is the police detective that helps him on the cases in all these books. And he has kind of a mixed relationship with Jim. Jim's not always the nicest guy, but he gets along with Rick. So sometimes they're a twosome. And they realize that the jumper... had been shot, and since Bruno was the last one to see him alive, they figure he must have gotten shot in that condominium complex, Wharf Landing. And there's a woman who is the manager of Wharf Landing. I think that's what you were leading to.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And even he has to track down Bruno. Who is this cab driver? So that's part of the work that he is doing, been tracking down Bruno. But who is this woman that he meets?
Yes, so they, Jim and Rick.
And Jim, you already told us that he needed the help of a detective.
Right, so they go to interview the woman. Her name is Adriana Vargas.
Would you read that section from your book?
Sure. A striking woman dressed in a chic pantsuit rose from her desk. Gentlemen, Adriana Vargas. Detective Allen, SFPD, Jim said. He nodded toward me. Dr. Rose from the San Francisco Medical Examiner's office. She pointed to a small conference table. Please, have a seat. Coffee, tea, glass of wine, perhaps? Jim shook his head. No thanks, ma'am. We're just here to ask a few questions. She sat down directly across from us. As you wish. What can I help you with? I cut right to the chase. Ms. Vargas, we believe a man was shot in this building during the early hours of August 22nd. Her jaw didn't fall open, but it looked like it might. That's preposterous. Are you sure you have the right building? Quite sure. That was almost 2 weeks ago. Why would the police not have contacted me earlier? The building wasn't identified until this morning, ma'am, Jim said. She shook her head in disbelief. That doesn't say much for our police department, does it, Detective Allen? Was this man badly hurt? He's dead, Miss Vargas. That's why I'm here, I said. And in which unit did the shooting take place? That's what we're here to find out. She made no effort to mask her indignance. You claim a man was shot dead in this building, but you don't know where in the building? He wasn't shot dead in this building. He was just shot. He died later, somewhere else. Adriana Vargas stood, the universal signal for the end of a meeting. I continued to sit, and so did Jim. She reluctantly sat back down. What do you gentlemen want of me? She asked. The names and contact information of all the owners in Wharf Landing, and the contact information of the night doorman, Jim said. I can give you the doorman's information, but Detective Allen, please, you know I can't give out personal information about our owners without a court order of some sort. Jim stood, and I followed. Fine, he said. Give us what you can, and we'll get a warrant from the judge for the rest. But you realize, Miss Vargas, that the warrant may cover the search of every unit in Wharf Landing. Adriana Vargas's demeanor changed on a dime. Detective Allen, I think we can get you what you want, but give me a little time to discuss it with my board. Jim handed her his card. No problem. We'll give you 36 hours.
This is author Mike Paul reading from his latest novel, The Jumper. So we meet this woman, Adriana Vargas, and we don't know quite what to think of her because she starts out kind of nice and then she's not very cooperative.
No, she's not. Rick has a dilemma. He checks all the names in the roster for Wharf Landing, and he has the feeling that maybe the jumper was from South America, maybe from Colombia, and there's reasons why he thinks that. So he decides to take a trip against, of course, Alex's advice. Not the first time he's done this, and he goes to Bogota.
Well, he goes to Bogota, and then later he goes to Cartagena.
He does,
and. He talks to this guy about a leather briefcase, and I mentioned that in the prologue, there's this mention of a leather briefcase, and we don't think much about it. Well, yeah, so he had a leather briefcase, but...
Right. The briefcase starts to become a major issue in the story, and so Rick decides he's going to go to... I don't pronounce Cartagena as well as you do. So he goes to Cartagena, where the manager of this big leather store is located, and he...
That wasn't easy either, tracking down the source of this leather briefcase. That's another thing that Rick had to do.
That Rick is a terrific guy.
Oh, isn't he, though?
But he finds himself here in a small office on the second floor, and he says, would you like me to read?
Yeah, okay. Would you read that?
So he says, sitting behind a large desk was a small man sporting wire spectacles and a pencil-thin mustache. His English was impeccable. Dr. Rose, he held out his hand. I'm Senor Ramirez Diaz. I have been expecting you. I shook his hand and took a seat. Really? News travels fast in Colombia. Believe it or not, Dr. Rose, we've had phones here for over a century. I apologize. I didn't mean it that way. I assume your Bogota manager, Senor Juan Perez Garcia, gave you a heads up. Your assumption is correct. Now, what is the real reason you need to know who purchased that case you are carrying? My job is to identify people who have died without identification. This briefcase was in the possession of such a man. You could make my job a lot easier. He plucked at the thin band of hair over his upper lip. It is not my job to make your job easier. Tell me, though, how did this man die? I'm afraid that's confidential. I see. He gave me a twisted grin. And so was the name of the buyer of the briefcase. Are you suggesting a trade? I believe I am. Something about this guy gave me the creeps. Maybe a half-truth was in order. He committed suicide. By gunshot wound? Either this guy was psychic, or somebody from the U.S. had already given him the answer. No, I said. He jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. I heard the door open behind me, and assuming it was the young man returning, I didn't turn around. The last thing I remember was a tremendous flash of light behind my eyeballs.
Oh, my goodness. This is author Mike Paul reading from his latest Rick Rose novel, The Jumper. And we find our main character in Colombia. And the last thing he remembers is a flash of light. So apparently he's been struck. So he thinks he's just going into this office where he's going to find out about this expensive leather briefcase. And he gets more than he bargained for.
He gets a lot more than he bargained for. And I won't even tell you how he gets out.
No.
We'll wait.
Don't
we'll
spoil
wait for,
it for the readers.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Well, I think people who've read your first two, or even if they've only read The Jumper, will think, well, gosh, now what?
Yes, and by the way, all these books, the Rick Rose series, they can stand alone. You don't have to read when Rick first gets into the morgue. And The Jumper, which is the third book in the series, is a good place to jump into the book.
Oh, my goodness, a punster.
Yeah.
Well, we like Rick's sense of humor. He's often sarcastic. And sometimes he has to make up stories about what he's really doing and who he really is. And sometimes Stella asks him questions that he really doesn't want to answer. So I think people will enjoy his character, this imperfect guy who is serious about his work, but has a sense of humor.
Yeah, I think you summarized it pretty well.
Oh, well, thank you, sir. So we'll look forward to maybe more episodes with our main character, Rick Rose.
I hope so.
My guest has been retired dentist and pilot, Mike Paul, and his latest Rick Rose novel is The Jumper. After a break, I'll be talking to poet Les Haight about his collection, Seeking Shining Gratitude. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. Chico poet Les Haight is a graduate of UCLA and UC Berkeley Law School. He became a California certified family law specialist and practiced until his retirement in 2023. As a litigator, Les Haight preferred mediation and out-of-court settlements. He began writing poems that reflect his ongoing search for pathways to love, forgiveness, and transformation. Seeking Shining Gratitude is a collection of poems born from a lifetime of inner inquiry. They're written with vulnerability and heartfelt awareness, and invite readers to inner healing. Les Haight, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, a listener might say, what? His name is Les Haight? And they probably don't know how you spell your name. So would you explain your name for us?
Sure. My last name is Haight, H-A-I-T. My mom was a big fan of Leslie Howard. So when I was born, she named me Leslie after Gone with the Wind fame and for Leslie Howard. And I shortened it to Les, and that's the rest is history, as they say.
And so it kind of reflects your poetry, don't you think?
I don't.
Your very name.
Yes, I think so.
Well, how is your collection of poetry? How is it different from, because I'm a fan of poems, but and I think similar in that I want the poem to make me feel something. But how is your collection of poetry different from, say, another collection of poetry?
So my collection of poetry is impressed with heart math teachings, which
Heart math?
Heart math. Heart math is a institute in Boulder Creek, California, that has studied heart coherence for two, three decades, and is a basic for the work of Joe Dispenza, who is a very well-known researcher and presenter of various meditations all over the world. So my poems try and reflect the search for spirituality and truth and emotional vulnerability. And so that's what I have launched myself to doing in this book.
So who would you say you published these poems for? Because you could have just written these poems and sat home and read them to yourself. So why did you want to put these poems out for people?
So that's how it started. I wrote the poems for myself, and I would reread them, and it brought me a lot of pleasure to release the poems to myself. But as time went on, I began to think, they're really calling to me to do something, to send them out. And I don't know if 10 people will be affected by them or more than that, but it's sending the poems into the energy field of humankind that I wanted to do.
Well, you started writing these while you were still practicing law.
Yes, yes.
So it isn't just something you retired and then you started writing poetry, but you were writing poems all along while you were practicing law.
I was, yes. I probably started writing the poems somewhere around 2019, 2018. And then I would write, sometimes I'd write a flurry of poems, and sometimes it would only be one poem a month. But they were always kind of appearing in my awareness and calling to me to write.
Well, you chose poetry. You could have written a journal or short stories, but you chose poetry. Was it because you had favorite poets yourself?
No. I honestly do not read poetry.
You only write poetry.
I only write poetry. And the reason I don't read poetry is I haven't found a genre in poetry that really appeals to me. And what I try to do with my poems is keep them short and keep them succinct and let the energy of the poem speak to me and hopefully to the reader.
Well, now that we've been talking about it, the listeners will probably say, well, let us hear one. Let's hear one of his poems. Okay. So in your book, you arrange it in two parts.
Yes.
What are the two parts? Some poems are in part one and some in part two. What's the difference in those two parts?
Well, the first part of the book is a part where it's all about gathering the energy. It's about gathering the search for spirituality, the search for the energy, and seeking that energy that maybe has been hidden from me. The second part is where it all begins to emerge, and it's the emergence of the resonance of the poems.
Now, I don't know if listeners follow that, but I think if they hear a poem, they, oh, that's what he means. So why don't you read In the Light I Will Not See?
Great. Yes. In the light I will not see. In the light I will not see lives the spirit I will not know. Way past time to change that. Been more than long enough. I'll hide my sad grief for what I did miss for those so many years. That feeling grows bigger just as I look. It would help so much if I could simply care. Find my caring somewhere inside, maybe. Some caring for me since I was beyond caring for even myself. Does spirit care? Care for me? Did it ever? I don't know. I never did. So I didn't care. Was that my best choice? Well, not my worst call. So if I look now, caring is a key. If I might begin to focus, I might take it in. I may start this off. I might do it slowly. Just a bit of caring, not too draining. I'll breathe with it a little, just maybe. I can have some hope. I will try caring a little for now.
This is newly published poet, Les Haight, and he's reading from his collection of poetry, Seeking Shining Gratitude. What would you like listeners to get from that poem you just read? The title was In the Light I Will Not See.
Right, and that is kind of an autobiographical picture of parts of my life. Not always. I've always been seeking, but there are times where I'm just so convoluted that I'm not seeking the light at all. And I'm stuck. And that stuckness is a refusal to look for the light on my part. And so what I'm expressing in that poem is an understanding and awareness of my reluctance to seek out the spiritual world.
And it seems like you're also saying, well, if this is how this is happening to me, probably other people too.
Yes. Yes. I think that's kind of an epidemic of sorts in our culture right now. A lot of the vitality of the culture is not about spirituality. Although there's a vital urge in spirituality, a lot is not.
Well, another in this part one is a poem called Numbing. Numbing?
Numbing.
Would you read Numbing for us, Les?
I would be pleased to read Numbing. Numbing. Not a choice I made wisely. I remember, though I don't want to, how that started. That numbing. So very long ago, 'cause I still carry those yesterdays along with me now. And those yesterdays are so very far off, yet even are quite near me. They are fresh, sudden, explosive, shocking. I pause, absorbing how very near it all was and still is. That numbing, so disordered, confused, disarranged, absorbing all sound, stilling my outcry. My sound would be violet if all color had not been drained. That numb surrounds my heart, enveloping it quieting its beating. Numbing will have its way. And so I numb without apology. No, by your leave, I just do. Now I'll try and look, if I ever will. Can I do better? Is there a better choice, a better way? Anything that I can trust? Trusting long enough to speak closely to that numbing and ask it to forgive. Ah, there's the challenge. My numbing won't ever allow for me to face forgiving. Simple acts of forgiving so yesterday's damage will not recur today. I can slowly pause that numbing and listen to the deeper me. And I can wonder what part wants to forgive.
The title of this poem is Numbing, and the author is Les Haight, a Chico poet. Now, what are we supposed to get from this poem, Les?
Ah, numbing is not something that was unique just to me. Numbing is something that many, many people in many aspects of their lives are doing as they go through their lives. Sometimes it's protective, sometimes it's necessary, but then it can become habitual. And numbing, when it's habitual, just deprives us of the sweetness of the emotionality of life, which we were brought here to really feel, in my opinion.
And so I think you've kind of explained how the poetry can be a mirror.
Right.
And a map, because you're hoping people will
find their way out of the trap of being numbed inappropriately when they have so much to offer to themselves in their own feelings and offer to others in their families, in the world, with their liveliness.
My guest has been poet, retired lawyer, Les Haight. And the collection of his poetry is Seeking Shining Gratitude. Thank you, Les.
You bet.
I would also like to thank my first guest, Mike Paul, who writes mysteries. The latest is The Jumper.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.